mistakes, and the analyst watching it back, like, as that was sitting up on the volley, there's only one place I'm expecting that to end up. Yeah, me too, mate. The fucking North Stand, smashed into the top corner of the fucking stadium. What are you talking about? How many times have we seen Ings smash that into the net? Not often.
This is Paul McGrath. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
That morning sky gave me a look, so I left while you were sleeping. That's all it took.
Really a great performance, was it? I mean, probably uninspiring, really, when you take a club who has played 153 less Premier League games than Gareth Barry. They've come to Villa Park. They've come to Villa Park. And they probably got the better of us, really. Villa, they didn't offer much. They were much better in the second half. Waited to make any changes. Actually, then there is a beauty, I don't know if I want to get straight into the goal, but there's a beauty of being able to score a goal out of nowhere, really, when you've been playing that badly. Yeah, we'll get back into the goal in a second, but what did you think overall, Liam?
Like, I know it's a tough old slog. The season is, for all intents and purposes, over. Like, there's nothing to play for. They're physically and mentally exhausted. But, Conan, do you think I want to do a second podcast in less than a fortnight about fucking Burnley? No, I don't. But I'll show up on Thursday night like a fucking pro. Like, I've just come off a 3-day wedding. Do you think I want to be doing this podcast? No, I don't. But I still turn up like the fucking professional that I am. And I'm going to have to look back over the photos from the wedding, because half the Aston Villa team must have been at it as well. There's plenty of room in the dance floor, so I'm sure, pretty sure John McGinn's arse wasn't there. I could hear the speeches pretty clearly, so there was no heckling. So obviously Martinez wasn't there either. There was a moment in the first night when someone turned around and knocked the tray out of the waiter's hand, and they didn't start blaming Mings, Cash or Dina, so it mustn't have been Konza. There was an open question about whether or not the rest of them were at the fucking wedding, because they were so lethargic, so sloppy in the first half. I mean, we managed to pull off a bizarre combination of taking too many easy, safe options, are refusing to play the ball around the corner and mixing that up with just trying to end the move in one pass. It's like a lot of attempted Hollywood balls that end up looking like a fucking Ed Wood pass. Waiting for all our people to make the tackle or the block. How many times did they defer to their own teammates? Waiting for someone else to come in and get the ball. Every attempt to dribble by a Villa player was read like a fucking Dr. Zayas book. Like, how many times did the Palace player just poked the ball away around the other side as a Villa player failed to dribble? You want that to be positive? I'm pretty positive they're all useless cunts.
I've got one for the wedding. Did anybody fail to find their seat because Danny Ings must have been there? Yeah, the only person I'm confident that I can say wasn't there was John McGinn. You said his arse wasn't there. John McGinn was probably the real bright spark of this performance. He definitely wasn't on a 3-day bend. Three days is pushing it a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, I should return the fucking festivals, Conan, at this rate, haven't I?
3 days is pushing it. Like, I always think day two is a bit presumptuous, but 3 days, like, that's definitely a big ask of people. But anyway, yeah, like, it took Villa a long time to get going. Yeah, like, Palace were just sitting very comfortably. They knew what they expect. I don't know how many times we have to say this. Teams watch DVDs of other teams. It's not even DVDs anymore. Well past that now, since we've been saying it. And, they just set up in a 5-3-2 formation, really, and yeah, they had three centre backs. They had three centre midfielders just blocking that central channel that Villa want to come down all the time. And yeah, they had just Milivojevic just tracking Coutinho, so Coutinho went deeper and deeper, and then they were able to just deploy Eze and Gallagher whenever they wanted in attack. They had the outlets at wing back whenever they wanted. They were just set up better. They knew what to expect from Villa, and Villa didn't change anything until they actually scored, and then they started playing better. But the first goal, yeah, I talked about not playing well, and yeah, ironically, it didn't come from down the centre. Well, not ironically at all, actually. Obviously, it didn't come down the centre. It came from out wide, where Luka Dinja was standing over a ball. What a lovely cross. Just, what, like, have you ever, like, it looks so simple, but have you ever, like, let's all be honest, have you ever just whipped the ball so perfectly in all your life with that flight? Just around everybody. It looks so simple. It's a classic cross, but it goes right around the back post, and it's so good that And it's not even Mark Gay's fault, really, but Ollie Watkins has made him look like a bit of a mug. Like, he's fallen over. He doesn't know where to go. He doesn't know whether to look at this perfect flight of a ball or look at Ollie Watkins, who's put his leg in between both of the defender's legs and put it in the back of the net brilliantly and runs away to say, "I'm here to stay." He tells the crowd that he ain't going anywhere. West Ham can bat their eyelids all they want. They can fuck off as far as Ollie Watkins is concerned. Yeah, great goal out of nowhere, really.
Yeah, like sometimes it's enough to have the sweetest left foot in the country whipping balls into the box for the best battler in the country. Yeah. It doesn't matter how shitty you play or how much weddings your players go to all week if you're just going to be whipping balls in like that. It's really bizarre defending from Klein and Gallagher for both of them to just watch Luca Dean have a look around and whip one into Watkins. Get on his cross, you absolute morons, or he'll put it exactly where he wants. Strange stuff. Imagine that was Villa. Imagine that was Luca Dean just watching somebody of his quality whipping in the ball. We'd be murdering in this podcast. It was unforgivable.
Yeah. We definitely would have assumed they were at that wedding with you. But, like, we had 12 minutes, I suppose, to enjoy it, and it was a good 12 minutes, really. Villa had their best spell after that, which is heartening in some level, but then they did concede 12 minutes later. Schlupp came on and got the goal. I don't know, it's a free kick from the left. It goes the whole way out to the right wing. Dougie's maybe a bit slow to get out and block it. I don't know if you can really blame him.
Oh, Dougie moves out pretty quickly.
Yeah, like that's, I'm looking for someone. Like, I don't know if I can really point a finger at anybody really in this goals, because it's a good cross in then, and it's one of those ones where the player's running back and he flicks it on, so it's like it's in a crowded area. Palace are big fuckers as well, and maybe Cash and Buendia allow Schlupp to run onto it, but again, the angle has changed now because the first cross has gone to the right wing and now he's crossed into somebody who's running back out, flicks it back in, and it's a goal. I don't know. Am I being too kind to say sometimes you concede? Like, I want to be angry because it wasn't a good performance, but I don't know if I can be that angry at that goal.
Yeah, like it's a pretty good knockdown, but it's not particularly difficult to go and win a header against a few statues, and Schlupp reacts quicker than those statues as well. Like, big surprise. Buendia shouldn't lose him so easily. And to be fair to Matty Cash, he can't tuck in to help him because he's got his hands full marking space. Like, he's got his hands full making sure space doesn't steal in to slot one at the back post. Like, fucking come in and help your mate. There's no one near you. And we shouldn't be set up so deep for the free, and we should probably push out a bit after the first cross. We should definitely jump out when the ball is being knotted down, but we don't jump out. That's not the Aston Villa way, Conan. Like, you know, whenever Matty Cash is working for Sky Sports in 15 years and everyone is tricked into thinking he knows what he's talking about because he was an international right back and he made a good impression early on in his punditry days because he was fresh out of the game and could explain how things work, and that memory will stick in people's heads even after he's been on TV every week talking absolute shit and making outrageous claims that he can't back up, even when he's so plainly compromised, and discussing his former club and his former super sub teammate, Emi Buendia, who's doing a dreadful job of managing Villa. Matty Cash will be on Sky Sports saying Aston Villa can't hire Jurgen Klopp, and not because he's retired, but because he plays a high line, because he's happy to try to catch the opposition offside, and that's just not the Aston Villa way. It's not in the DNA of the club. That's not how we did it under Smith.
You've come off a 3-day bender, and I think you've produced your greatest analogy yet. Well done. You are not on the beach. You have brought it. That is...
Don't you? I turn up every fucking night, Conan.
Unfortunately, though, the analogy has angered me because I am just now remembering, rather than thinking about Aston Villa's performance, I'm remembering Gary Neville talking about Antonio Conte and talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and all these things that I remember and I shouldn't be remembering down through the years. But you've also you painted just such a grim picture of punditry as well. And what it actually is. Anything else good from the game that you liked or that you didn't like?
There was very little about the game, and because I was just back from the wedding, I nearly fell asleep during the first half. It was so dull and so boring. I couldn't believe that this is what we were putting up. I couldn't believe that I didn't stick around for the hangover pints in the morning and rush back to watch this utter nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty shit. That's why we're going to go to WhatsApp Whinges. All right, WhatsApp whinges, no week's wages for Tyrone Mings this week. He's getting paid. He was very good and he's getting paid. He did take what I would call a good yellow card in the first half when he just tripped somebody when he was out of position. But he was out of position. What the fuck is our left centre-back doing at right centre-midfield with Ezri Konsa standing behind him, his centre-back partner? And they has to make, he has to make right enough. He's in that position. He has to trip him. Yeah, he's right to do it. But what was he doing there? How does he end up in these positions? Now, I feel bad that I'm saying this when Tyrone Mings was excellent again.
Yeah. What is he doing in right centre midfield? What's he also doing at the wrong side of the fucking Crystal Palace midfielders? He's galloping through. Like, he must have been playing number 10 if that's the position he ended up in.
Yeah. It is Ezri Konsa who does get fined this week, though, for an unnecessary corner concession. Ezri Konsa, I thought, was good as well until he went off injured, but yeah, didn't need to give away the corner. Gave away the corner, doesn't get paid this week.
Yeah, so, it all started with fucking Mings and Konsa and Dina running away from Zaha as they lined up a shot like they were playing fucking dodgeball or something. Yeah, it gets recycled and the cross comes in. And I actually think there's about 15 yards between Mings and Konsa. And just nothing but air in between them, no other players. But Konsa's reaction was so slow. It was like he didn't know what Klein was going to do at the other side of Mings. Like he momentarily forgot he was playing football. What's going on over there? That's Jesus! What the fuck was that? Did you just kick a ball at me?
What did he try? Did he try to take it down on his knee? Or like, what, did he just defend himself?
Just protecting his goods. Yeah, I don't know. Like it was so strange. I think he just forgot what he was trying to do and then panicked and then did just knee it out of play, which again, like Tyrone Mings, wandering into the number 10 position and having to take down Gallagher because he's fucked up. I think Konsa fucked up and then just dealt with it by kneeing it out of play.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, maybe this is the good habits that we saw last year then. I think we were saying that it was very clear when Villa were second-guessing themselves or they were in any... sniffing any bit of danger, just fucking deal with it, get rid of it, get like you will worry about it after. So maybe we should be all four corners and yellow cards. Actually, what a terrible way to set up. Go in position, make the wrong decision, give away a corner, get a yellow card. And that's your two centre backs.
Oh, Christ.
First WhatsApp whinge. You're not going to like this one. You can't wear your shirt buttons that low. Let me finish.
I don't need you to find. You're not going anywhere with this. I'm certainly not picking it up.
Let me finish. You can't wear your shirt buttons that low and wear a cardigan over it. Who am I talking about?
I haven't a fucking clue.
Patrick Vieira had about three buttons buttoned. And you know, and that's fine. Like, if you want to do that, great. And he's French, you can get away with it. But you can't wear a cardigan over the top of it. A buttoned up cardigan as well. Doesn't make any sense.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
That I don't think you heard me whinging about my hangover at the start of this podcast. Fucking move it on.
Okay, more serious WhatsApp whinge. Oh, look. There's Zaha at it again. This boy is unbelievable, isn't he? Like, how can you listen to 30 or 40,000 people every other week call you a wanker and not see the error of your ways somewhere along the way? Like, they all think you're a prick. And I tell you what, Milivojevic wasn't fucking enjoying it either. He was sick of it. He eventually went up to Zaha and told him to stop it. Zaha started gesturing to the crowd, sticking his tongue out, and his captain basically gave him a push to say, what are you doing? And then Zaha spent the next 30 seconds giving out to Milivojevic and sort of signaling back to him, pretending to laugh at him. Remember, Zaha used to be a good player. How is he just let this distract him so much now that like this is all he's doing? I can't believe he didn't get sent off. The ref actually seemed to be afraid of him. Give that. I would be so quick to give that man a fourth yellow card, never mind a second one. The ref didn't want any bit of it.
Yeah, and that is the thing. It does distract him as well. And I think every time we play Palace, I forget, amazingly, I forget how much of a whinging cunt Zaha is. And that moment he put his hands to his ears, we know it's bothering you, Wilfred. Like, you're running around whinging like a child. You can't just cup your ears after 70 minutes to pretend it's not hurting you. That's why we're booting you, because it's getting into your head. That's why we're doing it, because it is getting to you. Because you've become more and more erratic as the game goes on. Your decisions are becoming worse. You're running down blind alleys. Cupping your ears isn't going to get you out of this. You need to open your fucking eyes. And what a waste of time as well. Chris Kavanagh doesn't want to make a decision, Wilfred. Chris Kavanagh's not going to do anything controversial here. Yeah. He just wants to get through this. Like, he comes across as the type of fella that would be bullied in a fucking seminary. And to be fair, he is very generous with his fucking forgiveness. I mean, he absolved John McGinn of about 7 yellow card offences. But if he's the man you're relying on, Wilfred, you need to reassess your fucking life choices. And the weird thing about Wilfred Zaha is, as well, he acts like he thinks he's worth £80 million.
Yeah. Right?
But whenever he was offered to teams for £80 million, they all went, fuck off. Like, even Arsenal said, sorry, there must be a bad line here. It sounded like he said 80 million. Did you mean 18? Arsenal spent 72 million on Nicola Pepe.
And they wouldn't fork out for Wilfred Zaha, who, unbelievably, I'm just checking now, like, the only thing more surprising than him not getting taken off at some stage in that game was that he didn't get one yellow card. The whole time I was there wondering, like, why, like, the ref just isn't disciplining him now, because he doesn't want to send him off. You're right, like, Kavanagh didn't want to make any decisions the whole match, didn't want to give a free half the time, so, like, he was never going to get interested in giving a player a second yellow card for dissent. But Zaha didn't even get one, like, for any of those tackles, for any of those dives, for any of those remonstrations. Like, I would just give him a yellow card for the sight of him. Gesturing to the crowd, like, that's inciting, that's dangerous. Like, there's another one. You can pick out so many moments, so many opportunities to put this wee wanker in his place. It's the most bang on chant that Aston Villa fans have created in the last 30 years, and it's so simple. Wanker, 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 wanker.
But, like, how is Chris Kavanagh going to book somebody who's walking around with a fucking chalice doing the sign in lacrosse? Can't get your bookie pot cards out of your pocket.
Next WhatsApp whinge. Don't really know if this is more of a whinge, but it is. Based on today, the best ending to the season would be to throw the game against Burnley, do over Frank Lampard, and rest the team up for a big, massive one final performance against City on Sunday.
Yeah, that is, like, I think I said this about 5 games ago. The most important thing for me for this season is that Frank Lampard gets relegated. Yeah, and, like, it does remain important for me. The only thing, the most difficult decision I have to make now in the final day of the season is whether or not I want Arsenal or Everton to win.
Yeah, because you wouldn't be able to handle Mikel Arteta getting into the top four.
No, see, I've gone too deep into the Mikel Arteta's a fraud line, so I can't back down from that now.
It's very nice, like, you know, it is. Some teams don't have anything to play for. This Premier League is all in our hands. Like, you know, our fate isn't really, who cares about what happens to us. Like, but the top and the bottom of the Premier League is all up to Aston Villa. Like, they can fuck over Everton by losing to Burnley, and they could just very easily lose to Burnley anyway, based on today's performance. And they could fuck over Pep Guardiola. It's like Pep and Frank Lampard are there. Like, how much do these boys want it? How much does Gerrard want it? Like Liverpool man Gerrard could hand the title to Liverpool and fuck over Everton. Does he want it or not? Rest the boys up.
Fuck over Frank Lampard as well, who we all know is his greatest rival in the competition for best midfielder of all time.
But I should clarify, I am joking, because I don't want to sit through that.
I am joking, I actually do support Aston Villa.
I don't want to have to sit through an hour and 90 minutes like that on a Thursday night as well. Yeah, it's bad enough if they watch Burnley twice in a few weeks, but it's at Villa Park. It's the last game, actually, at Villa Park as well. Let's sign off with a bit of pride, because I tell you what, sorry, go on.
Yeah, let's finish above fucking Brentford as well.
Yeah, oh, my fucking God. That's so true. And make sure we finish above Newcastle. there's too much on the line. Sorry. Like, yeah, let's think Frank's going to be all right. Well, if we can get our acts together. But I was watching that match today, and I shouldn't. Sometimes, like, I judge how good a time I'm having based on how good a time other people are having. I'm sitting there watching that match thinking, Jesus, I wonder if Wes Edens and Nassif Sawiris are going to be freaking out. Like, you know, what have we bought? What's the point of this? This is a big pointless, meaningless venture. There they are, Villa Park, our owners, our beloved owners. And this is what they're in charge of. And you sort of dying to intercept to say, no, it's been way better, I promise. Like, it's usually great. We're usually playing good stuff. The fans are usually absolutely bouncing.
What the fuck would you want to say that for?
Oh, yeah, right enough.
Let them see how shit it is. Let them see how bollocks my life is, because Danny Ings could not have fucking his arse of a banjo.
Oh, I'm going to get to Danny Ings, all right. Just you wait after this.
I burst onto the scene, didn't I? And I was going to be the next best thing.
Oh, who was it that said? There was an interview somebody recently, and they said that he's always positive. It was Micah Richards.
Hold on, I played for England at 18, youngest ever defender to play for England.
It was Micah Richards, he was talking on Sky Sports, and he said he's always positive. Sometimes you wish he wasn't as positive. Like, he said he was too nice.
Right.
What do you think, Ron?
I think Micah Richards should shut the fuck up. What the fuck has Micah Richards ever done for Aston Villa? Dean Smith got Aston Villa promoted from 14th in the championship. Micah Richards was just there collecting 40 grand a week while that was all happening.
Oh, he's just brilliant. He's just top. What a guy to work with, you are, honestly.
All right, let's start with the Danny Ings, or sorry, the Rosenthal one. Do you have another week's wages sentence to hand out here, actually, for the commentary team on whatever American stream I was watching? Matt Cash comes in along the byline, looks up, fucking leathers it across for a throw-in, and they all say, good ball, but, you know, that classic, well, nobody was there. Good ball, but nobody was there. Was it really a good ball?
You know, I can't believe I'm going to do this 2 weeks in a row, because I think I've might have been responsible for putting this idea into your head that that's absolute nonsense. I think I infected you in your youth about how stupid that was. Now it was always better on balance to pass the ball to another teammate instead of just kicking it out for a throw-in. But again, like, it's lovely football. I've assumed it's one. It's lovely football from McGinn and Cash, and yeah, it's a brilliant ball from McGinn. And like last week, though, I think Cash sees the movement into the 6-yard box and he puts his head down. And Watkins has to know what's coming. But he pulls up like he's trying to make space for a cutback. It's like there's probably too much on the ball anyway, definitely.
Yeah.
But I had to see our centre forwards fuck themselves across that space. Like, they have to do it. Like, take the leap of faith, Ollie. Trust that Matty will catch you. The ball is going to definitely come across that 6-yard box, and he should be busting a gut to get in there, particularly because he knows Matty Cash is going to do that for a start. But also, he's made the run. Cash's head is down. So you can't change your decision now. He's passing it to where he thinks you're going to go based on the last thing he said. Or the last thing he saw.
If I felt like Walker's had any chance of getting that ball, then I would be more looking at him for not being there. But, like, yeah, it was just hit with so much. There's somebody else lingering around the other side of the box, but, like, they were even less of a chance to get in there. Maybe a bit of both. But it just wasn't hit well. Maybe the commentary team don't deserve to be fined. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, look, I'm sure we can take plenty of money off them anytime we want. Every week they'll say something stupid. Don't worry. We'll get them back.
The first Rosenthal nomination, I think I've got three Danny Ings ones in a row here. So the first one just starts off nice and simple. Douglas Luiz cross Ings gets out in front of his marker just to clear the danger, just pokes it out of play. Any defender would be proud of how coolly he just puts his foot in there, just lets it go out. You no need to do anything special, like just get it away from the danger area.
Yeah, that one was actually, it started off brilliantly from McInn, just sheer ignorance to burst past four Crystal Palace players, and it's an absolutely delicious ball in from Dougie, lovely little whip into the space, and it's a great run from Ings. But I'm starting to wonder if he actually does make great runs, if he actually does have great movements and instincts, because his instincts should be telling him at this stage to stop getting free and forcing his teammates to give him the ball so that he can give the opposition a goal kick. He needs to take that out of their hands. He's got too much power here.
We could probably split this award up into the Ings chances and then everybody else. So we'll go through his first, because usually he wins anyway. Like somebody has suggested, and yeah, feel free to give us a shout on Twitter, the Villa Podcast, or on Gmail, thevillapodcast@gmail.com, just for end of season awards. Somebody suggested doing a Rosenthal end of season award, but like we know Ings has won this most weeks. So he's definitely, like, I assume, by the laws of averages, he's going to win. He'd win the overall one, but his second chance was the volley. So all starts off with Douglas Luiz bouncing a ball back to Nakamba, putting him under a bit of pressure in the centre circle. And Nakamba shows great footwork, tidies it up, gets away from his man, and spreads the play out to McGinn on the left. We talked about McGinn and Douglas Luiz being on the left and right, McGinn on his left foot, Douglas Luiz on his right foot last week, and here we were, John McGinn on the left foot, unbelievable ball into Ollie Watkins, great run from Watkins, like we see, good bit of defending just to get in front of him, and it just sets up lovely for Danny Ings to volley it, and he should do better, really.
Yeah, an absolutely delicious ball from John McGinn, again, gone to waste, and the analyst watching it back, like, as that was sitting up on the volley, there's only one place I'm expecting that to end up. Yeah, me too, mate. The fucking North Stand smashed into the top corner of the fucking stadium. What are you talking about? How many times have we seen Ings smash that into the net? Not often.
Yeah, it was 13 yards out. Like, he really should have been doing better. It wasn't sitting at a height. He had time. But just dropping on his preferred foot, 13 yards out, just put your foot through it. You don't even need to put it through with any special bit of venom. Just put your foot through it and score.
Simple game, Colin.
Yeah. His last nomination is the one where he just tries to put it in the top right corner and hits it wide. Like, he should score as well. Like, it's a great tackle from McGinn on the left. Yeah, it's a right footer through ball. Lovely through ball from him to Ollie Watkins. Ollie Watkins holds the defender up. Like, you know, come on, Danny, let's go, come on, let's go. It's like that video of Wayne Rooney showing his son where the net is, trying to get him to roll the ball in from 1 yard out. He's like, come on, Danny, let's go. He rolls it out for his right foot. Danny Ings tries to whip it into the top right corner, and just, he doesn't whip it, he just hits it and it goes wide.
Yeah, again, brilliant ball from McGinn into Watkins, who holds it up like Ollie Watkins and gives it to Ings, who shoots like Danny Ings.
Yeah.
At this stage, he turns around with his hands out in disbelief. How can you not believe, Danny? A look on his face of as if to say, what else can I do? Score! Fucking hit the ball properly into the net.
Yeah. So what do you, like, the volley and that one are hard to, like, hard to split, really. Like, I could go with either.
Let's give him two this week.
Yeah. Yeah, the other nominations, Ollie Watkins had a header from a corner that was blocked. It took somebody out, actually. It's just a vicious header. And then it comes out to Coutinho on the rebound, and Ollie Watkins is on the ground, and he tries to poke it in. It might have been offside, but he missed the ball as he was on the ground trying to hit it.
Yeah, it was, I think it was beginning to hit the volley, was it? And, oh, no, sorry, I know, yeah, that's a different one. Yeah, no, wait. He was definitely offside. The corner was amazing with so much venom on it, and it's a really good connection on the header from Watkins, and it's just really frustrating that Anderson blocks the ball just because he exists, because he was born 25 years ago. Like, he played no part in blocking that. It was a complete accident of birth that he denied the goal. He was picked by Patrick Vieira, and 80 minutes later, the ball hit him on the face.
Gorgeous corner from Douglas Origia. Great header from Watkins. Just somebody happened to be in the way. McGinn, you mentioned it, his volley. Emi Buendia is coming in his own at this stage. Just lovely interplay with Luca Dina. Luca Dina tries a long range shot. Buendia tidies it up again. Lovely interplay. Luca Dina tries a cross and it gets deflected out, and John McGinn has the volley.
Yeah, it was a gorgeous little bit of play, and that was whenever Villa actually started to play. They came a bit late to the party, but they were starting to stitch a few things together, and yeah, look, it was a good effort.
Emi Buendia then plays Watkins through, who's a mile onside. Good first touch, really good first touch. It's a very tight angle. Like, it would have been a script. I'm not expecting him to score from where he's at. I'm expecting him to do a lot better of a shot, though.
Yeah, like, it's almost the perfect pass. It's maybe missing a little bit of zip, so Watkins has to drag it with him. And yeah, at that stage, because he's dragged it so wide, he probably should just spank it. He definitely shouldn't just ankle it out for a goal kick. Get your laces on that, Ollie.
Yeah, well, anyway, the winner is Danny Ings by two. The Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award. Where to start? A couple of those passes. Matt Cash to Eze.
Yeah. I watch a lot of football, and this is a problem that's peculiar to Villa. Like, no other team consistently plays through balls to the opposition. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I'm sure I know what the next nomination is.
The Campbell three ball to the opposition.
Like, unbelievable. Like, I suppose if we're going to pass to the opposition, we might as well wrap it into their centre forward's feet. I mean, he's taking it to a different level. This time was unbelievable. Like, Marvellous doesn't do things in half measures. It's such a bad decision to play the ball back anyway in general. Like, what are we doing? Let's go. Let's get moving. And maybe this one moment will teach them a lesson. Maybe now they'll realise that passing the ball backwards is a really bad idea, really bad way to try to score a goal, particularly if you're going to pass it to the fucking opposition. To be fair, Chambers does brilliantly to hold up Zaha. I mean, Zaha tried to sell him a few dummies. He was going on so fucking long, he was trying to sell him insurance and Oxycontin and fucking glow sticks and elastic twirly helicopters with flashing lights on them. But I think Emmy actually got stung for a pair of knockoff Ray-Bans, to be fair. Chambers wasn't buying anything. He's been in Piazza San Marco before, Conan. No grazie. He just took the ball instead.
Yeah. Martinez wasn't shopping, but when he saw a bargain, he had the money. And he sat down, like, very quickly, and yeah, thankfully it was Zaha on the ball who wanted to keep selling, but like, if he had looked up, he would have seen an empty net.
Yeah, sometimes you just take the profits and the cash out.
The winner, though, this week of the Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award goes to an Instagram message, and the winner goes to Matt Target. Because this is a what the fuck of all what the fucks. Jack Grealish has just helped Man City fight back and draw 2-2 with West Ham, although it doesn't actually affect anything because Liverpool have fallen so far behind now in the goal difference over the last few games. They still needed two results anyway from Man City, so the draw is just as good as a loss for them. Grealish puts out a post and says, "It's all in our hands. Can't wait for the game next weekend." Good for Grealish, by the way, not to have to say, "Well done, boys." Where if you go through most of his Instagram posts this year, is just him congratulating the team on playing well, but this time he actually got to play. And then Matt Target comes in with a reply to Grealish saying, "It's all in our hands. Can't wait for the game next weekend." Target with a love heart eyes emoji and an applause emoji. Hasn't gone down well. He got a snake emoji. He got a rat emoji. He got somebody saying to him, "Stop dick riding." He got somebody saying, "If you have nothing to say, keep quiet. Shut up, Matt. You melt. You're being loaned to Norwich, mate." "Be quiet." So yeah, just stay out of Matt. You know he's playing your club next week. Shut up.
Yeah, I think you've made two mistakes there, really. I think you're saying that City or Liverpool always needed City to cock up twice. I mean, you're assuming that Villa aren't going to batter them 5-0 at Villa Park, allowing Liverpool to just, you know, win 2 or 3-0. And you're also, the second mistake you've made is also following Matt Target on Instagram.
Yeah, well, obviously I don't follow him. It was Jack Grealish. I still haven't been able to unfollow. Maybe I will if we stop winning the the title this year. That's not what I'm in it for. I just want Villa to beat Man City and get a fucking big result against the top eight team. Shouldn't have to keep qualifying. That's my fault. Winner of the what the fuck, yes, Matt Target. Do you let Glenn Whelan take a 90th minute penalty award? Maybe another opportunity to find the commentators who said, and I quote, "We thought maybe Steven Gerrard would change things at the start of the second half." Well, you only have yourself to blame.
Yeah, it is. It's always baffling how little understanding of football the commentators have. But it's even more baffling how little understanding Steven Gerrard seemed to have of that game of football that was currently developing in front of his eyes and which he had a fair bit of control of. It's like he froze. I mean, we had no control of a game at home against a direct competitor. I mean, the only thing good about the performance in the first half was five or six passes from McGinn. Unfortunately, they ended up falling at Danny Ings' feet eventually. And there are two things that make that even worse, is that we have really good ball players on the bench. And I know he knows that because he eventually brought them on. But also, there were players begging to come off. Nakamba was done after about 20 minutes. Louise, Nakamba and McGinn were all part of a midfield that had no control of a game at home against a direct competitor. Ings was blowing hard after about an hour, mostly because he had to make so many pointless runs to shite passes over the top or to track back after a shite pass. And it made sense to make a change to the system anyway. And I know we don't have a direct replacement for him, but that's fine because the diamond wasn't working. I mean, Cash and Dina were nowhere near that game for 70, 75 minutes, which is an absolute disaster when you're set up in a diamond formation. And you'd be watching that game thinking they were wrecked, but they were the most involved in the last 15 minutes. We just spent 75 minutes persisting with a system that didn't get the best out of two of our biggest threats, that didn't get anything out of them, never mind their best. It was insane. It was almost criminal that he just allowed the game to develop for so long like that.
And a byproduct of it was Coutinho dropping so deep then as well. Like that was frustrating. Like, it was nice to see him control the game, and like, he does it so easily, and it's fun to watch how he just passes and moves. He's got so much energy when he's moving again for the next ball. But we don't want him there. But like, he needed to be there because Palace had just clogged that central channel, and Villa weren't for changing anything.
They weren't, but and the changes he made as well. Like, think about the two players that you can unleash here, Stephen. I'm like, maybe he's listening to the physios too much. maybe he should just say, "Fuck the red zone. I need Jacob Ramsey and Buendia on this pitch." And it's Jacob Ramsey and Buendia. You're two of your best players. Not only that, they're two absolute fan favorites. Every time Jacob Ramsey got the ball, people sat up.
Yeah.
All he did a couple of times was just run forward. With the ball at his feet, but on a note, didn't do anything spectacular. He just carried the ball deeper into the Palace half, and the crowd got on their feet. One of them ended up, he beautifully rolled a 2-yard pass to Dina to whip in the cross for the goal. But it was just the energy of the stadium changed, not only when Ramsey came on, but every time he got on the ball. And it was just amazing that he just didn't pull that trigger quickly. He didn't just reach for two of his best players who were sitting on the bench.
But that's it. Like, he had a bit of intent. Just like, he drew a tackle. Like, even if it was just a simple tackle, somebody coming out a few more meters to him. It was giving Palace on. They think it was giving us on to be excited about. It was making the other players get back up on their fucking toes because, there was a stage where it seemed like a bit pointless. It was, like I say, it was nice watching Coutinho, but it seemed pointless for stages. It was like, well, what is the point of passing to him? Because, again, we're not going anywhere, really. Why does everybody keep giving it back to him? And then you see Konsa trying to play a similar pass to what Coutinho was doing, and just fucks it up. It was like, oh, just keep giving it back to Coutinho then. But that's not helping the overall idea of trying to score. Palace, we're delighted to see that. And you're so right to mention the red zone thing as well. I'm not against science, Liam. You know that. Like, put that on a t-shirt. But, you know, there is a bit more to football as well. Like, we don't want players getting injured. And, you obviously want players closer to their optimal condition to play and stuff like that. But it's not all about doing 100-meter runs up the pitch. It's not all about sprinting back. And, you know, there's other little things that maybe the numbers can't give you, like a drop of the shoulder, like a right decision, like a cool head, you know, a right pass, bit of technical skill, like the... These are things. I'm not trying to sound like a science basher or a data whinger or like Mourinho who hates his physios and stuff like that, but they're definitely someone that needs to be brought into the conversation too. And like that includes when people are looking at the data on the sideline when they're talking about taking players off. It's like, but can he do something even in the condition he's in? Can he do something more than somebody's at 100%? Like, do take into account the game as well. That's my only advice to these people.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely bang on. Yeah, fair enough. He doesn't look like he can play for 20 minutes, but he doesn't have to play that way. He doesn't have to play the way you're imagining he's going to play in those 20 minutes. We can just get him on. Say if it was Buendia, like, yeah, just don't track back. We're trying to win the game here, so you stay up. You know, you can get them to do different things, things that will get 20 minutes out of them. You can try and get them to adapt their play so they can stay on the pitch for longer because they're brilliant on the ball, or because the players you have on the pitch are doing fuck all, or because they're actually cast as well.
Yeah. And even like the Luca Dina thing, maybe there was a bit more conversation at halftime about getting those boys into it, but it didn't seem like it. Like, we didn't come out. Like, that was the obvious thing where we're missing width for, like, these boys aren't in the game. And we didn't come out with any response. And I came out and Palace were on top again until Ramsey carried that ball, rolled it to Luca Dina, who crossed a lovely ball. And that was it, really. Like, that was the opening up then for Villa, and they played well for 12 minutes and drew the match. You know? But yeah, it just didn't address anything, really, which was a bit of a concern.
But yeah, and Dina came into the game more whenever Ramsey came on, because he had a platform to get forward. He had someone to go with. He was joining in with Ramsey. And Matty Cash started playing better in the last 15 minutes after Buendia came on, because Buendia was primarily playing on the right-hand side. And Cash could join in with him. It was so simple to get them into the game, get the ball over to their side of the pitch and get it up high so that they can then join in and do something spectacular. And both of them did a lot of spectacular things whenever we started playing decently.
Yeah. Well, Tim Sherwood, we played two number 10s and bamboozled them award. Philip Coutinho and Emi Buendia on the pitch at the same time. We did enough crying about it not happening and we finally got it. And yeah, I suppose a big shout out to Coutinho as well for playing 90 minutes. Got them in the bag and great to see.
Yeah, it was. And there was a moment where both of them had volleyed attempts as well. There was one from Coutinho, actually. Probably should be in the Rosenthal nominations, where it would have been an incredible goal. He takes a touch and it's nearly good, and the shot is nearly good, but his footing is absolutely fucking dreadful. You know, people call him a little dancer, but leave the ballroom shoes at home next week and bring a pair of fucking football boots. It was a bit of slipping from Felipe that didn't help him, but it's absolutely brilliant to see him on the pitch, because sometimes that will be needed. Playing a diamond has worked really well for us, but some games it's just not working, and then you can fucking change it, and you can especially change it whenever your second best attacking player is sitting on the bench. Get them on.
Yeah, and especially when the other team are set up only to stop you playing, really. Like, and Palace, because of that, played well then. Like, but their sole purpose, their primary focus of that match was stopping Villa's diamond. Work. So when that happens, yeah, you might have to adapt and show a bit of flexibility. And when you've got, like, the bench was ridiculous. We're still missing a striker, obviously, on the bench, but you had Big Bertie T, you had Chukwuemeka, you had Tim. None of these boys came on. For the Morgan Sanson fans, he was there, so for everybody. Ashley Young, bit of experience. Callum Chambers was needed. We got an injury at centre back. Buendia and Ramsey, like, that's a strong bench with a lot of options, a lot of ways of change. Like, Ramsey and Buendia have been two of our best players this season, and we were able to spring both of them off the bench.
Yeah, and we brought Callum Chambers on at centre half. You know, we know he can play midfield or number 10 as well. So, a lot of flexibility on the bench as well, Colin.
The Vyman meter going up, I have Konza because he was going down so low. So yeah, it's all relative. When you're down that low, it's easier to get up. He had a good block for a Gallagher header. By the way, there we go. You know, obviously we get a lot of stick for our pronunciation, or my pronunciation of Norwich. But you were getting a bit of stick. You probably didn't see this for your pronunciation of Matip. You said Matip. And I hear a lot of commentators and English people say Gallagher. I have to tell you, it's Gallagher. I'm happy to correct people. I'll put up with their mispronunciations as well. But yeah, Ezra Konsa had a good block on a Gallagher header with his head. Lovely interception as well from a from a good cross. He just got in the front and touched it away. Touched it back to Emi Martinez. Like, just really cool, really good first touch for an interception as well. Yeah, it was better, apart from one bad pass, really. And one unnecessary corner that he gave away.
Yeah, the header that he blocked from Gallagher was brilliant as well. And it's really, it looks like it's hitting him, but he's really intentionally flicked his neck back to get it up and over the bar. It was a brilliant piece of play. And yeah, I think you're right. I think he's going up only because he had fallen down so far, and that was a steadying performance. The knee injury looked unbelievably painful, but hopefully it was just one of those ones that causes a lot of pain initially, but we'll see.
Going up, Matt Cash, he's fucking brilliant, doesn't he? Like, it's no surprise that he won supporters players of the year. He's just made mincemeat of Zaha. Like, he loved that, didn't he? Every time Zaha tried to get anywhere near the box, he just destroyed him. Really came into it in the second half then. He's a great player.
Yeah, and it's funny, the commentator agreed with her, said that, oh, that'll be a great watch now. This be a great matchup. You're even thinking about it beforehand, like, what's going to be a good matchup? And I was thinking Matty Cash and Wilfried Zaha, and I was just thinking, you lads are fucking idiots. Like, this is not going to be a good matchup. Like, the Matty Cash is going to absolutely destroy him, especially because John McCain apparently is going to be going out of his way to piss Zaha off all game. But there's no way in the world that Zaha was going to get the better of Matt Cash.
Yeah, and like, going up probably the most this week, yes, John McCain, like, he was sensational. I thought his passing was brilliant, his decision making, his neat tight touches, like, his long range passing, neat tight touches, great footwork. He put a couple people on their arses and skipped by them, and he did all this whilst also ruining Zaha's life as well, apparently. Like, you know, Zaha completely got distracted by all this stuff. John McGinn was just doing it on the side. Like, where once he was trying to sell arses on the side, he was just trying to, I don't know, sell Zaha's soul. Like, he was in that boy's head, and he was hammering him big tackles. He seemed to never look at him the whole match. Zaha was spending the whole time, like, trying to shout at him, trying to remonstrate with the referee, pointing at him again, just never once just put his eyes on him. He just completely destroyed him, cleaned him. He took balls off him. He took balls past him. He took his legs from underneath him, and he just never even gave him respect to even look at him and pretend like he existed.
Yeah. maybe he needed to do that as well, because if I was looking at him and listening to him whinge like that, it would have been hard for me to stay on the pitch, I'd say. But John McGinn also brilliantly played the referee. He got the measure of him so early on and realized, geez, I can do whatever the fuck I want here, it turns out. And he did it consistently throughout the game, and he turned around either looking annoyed at the referee and played it well. Like, he genuinely thought there was one of these absolutely, I don't even know if it was, I think it was Klein, which is absolutely clean. It was terrible tackle. He's about a second late, and he sort of pointed at the ball, and he was so pissed off saying, I got the ball. I was convinced. And then it shows you back. He's not even going in the right direction to win the ball. Yeah. He just took his ankles out. Incredible.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Going up, Ollie Watkins, his movement's brilliant. I called him a good egg last week. He's just a great player to have. Anybody else you want to go up particularly?
I've nearly put Ings up as well, because I felt so sorry for him. Like I said, Villa were dreadful in the first half, and Ollie Watkins and Ings, if you're putting up Ings or Watkins, you might as well put up Ings as well, just for effort, just in the spirit of the Vyman meter, because a tough old fucking slog for 70 minutes of that game, having to put up those shit bags that were playing behind them. John McGinn definitely played well. His passing was brilliant and his energy was good, but he was also part of a three-man midfield that didn't have control of the game against one of their nearest rivals at home. Like, that's also not good. I mean, I don't think John McGinn's decision-making was... His decision-making was never geared towards getting better control of the game. He was always trying to make stuff happen, which isn't necessarily bad, obviously, whenever it works. And it worked a lot today, but we also needed to settle the game down a lot in that first half, and we just didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he threw Andy Vyman back in my face. Like, I was going to have Danny Ings going down. just nothing stuck to him and he kept slipping and stuff. But like, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe
No, sorry. Like I regret saying that. His effort was great, but he's also a centre forward who missed three absolute sitters.
Going down, like, our tendency for backward passes when things aren't going well, like that was fairly annoying, to be honest.
It's not just the backwards passing, it was the refusing to play the slightly more interesting, slightly and only slightly riskier ball inside. Like, whenever a player had the ball on the wing, and it wasn't just the guy on the ball who was at fault, the player receiving it midfield always stepped back to their left to take it handier instead of just stepping inside the defender who's committed and taking it in there, because there would be another tackle coming in quicker. That's all right, move the ball on so that whenever the tackle comes in, the ball's not there anymore. Yeah. It's grand. But they never did it. They never moved into the space and the ball was never presented into the space. A lot of Glenn Whelan-esque performances in the first half.
Yeah, and like, you know, like, that's why it's so annoying, because that spell that we had then that was good, you take a lot of pride. Like, it only takes 10 minutes of a good glimpse to really, like, you know, just win you over for this Villa team. And you start looking at it then, you look at Dean and you see Matt Cash and you see Jacob Ramsey and McGinn and his pump and Watkins running around it, like Buendia and Coutinho. It's like, this is a good team. This is a really good team. And like, why does that not always happen? Why do we not always see that? Why are they passing it back? I don't get it. Like, what's going on?
If, like, why would you pass the ball to Tyrone Mings when you can pass it to Felipe Coutinho? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Are we excited about signing this lad or not? Fucking give him the ball. But Coutinho as well, you're right, dropping in to control the game and watching him do it is nice, but we don't want it to happen. But he needs to stop doing it as well. It's not just that the game has developed this way and he's doing it. Don't do it. He's allowing the game to develop this way by drifting in. Like we said before, Felipe Coutinho picking the ball up 40 yards from his own goal is pointless, because he's not 40 yards from the opposition goal to pass it to him anymore.
Yeah.
He's the player you want to be getting that ball from, the person who's picked it up.
Going down for the last time on the Vyman meter. probably a year after he should have last gone down. Jack Grealish. I'm sorry. I should have talked about this when I first talked about him. And I'm sorry to keep still talking about Jack Grealish 36 games into another season. But did you see his comments after the match? He said, something I've never experienced before, to win a trophy on the last day of the season.
Oh.
Yeah, that's not nice, is it? Especially for somebody who said that was the best day of his life. Like, what do you think of that?
Jack Grealish couldn't remember what shoe he was wearing immediately after he put on one shoe. So, you know, we know this guy's a fucking moron. How can we expect him to remember 2 years ago?
Yeah, and that is the thing with Grealish. Like, you can give him a lot of stick, you can be hurt by him, like I obviously am, but his biggest crime in any of these interviews or any of these situations is just he's stupid. Like, you know, he doesn't realize what he's saying half the time. Like, he hasn't thought through about the different angles or who's going to be upset about something. Maybe he should, maybe he's got a responsibility to for sensitive people like me, but yeah, I'd say if I put that to him, it would be, he would be affronted, I would say. Anyway, questions we can't answer, but probably will. Do you think you've seen enough today that warrants Patrick Vieira to win manager of the season? not the worst name, I'd say, actually, on the candidates for, well, maybe it is, for manager of the season. Thomas Frank. He's done really well. Manager of the season? I don't know. Pep Guardiola? Eddie Howe? gets the biggest transfer budget in the world in January. Jurgen Klopp and Patrick Vieira. Patrick Vieira, like, I think that's the strangest one. Like, well, Jesus, he's done all right. He's done nothing bad. He's done nothing good. Well, not that he's done nothing good. He's manager of the season.
Yeah, I think it's a bit mad. Yep, I mean, why not give it to Graham Potter as well, or Steven Gerrard? Because they're
definitely
all
in, like, Potter's ahead of them.
Yeah, they're all in that same bracket though as well. They're all within 5 points of each other, and they're all going to swap around on the last day of the season. We don't know where any of them are going to finish yet. Yeah. They're in that bracket, con that famous 9-14.
It's fucking that's bracket.
That's where those teams are.
And we're spending the next season talking about 9-14.
Yeah, like it is. It's absolutely mental. Obviously, I mean, they're only 8 points above Frank Lampard's Everton. Like, you know, none of these managers have pulled off fucking trees here. Like, it's insane. Like, you can look at their finishing position and think, yeah, that's good, but you have to put a bit of context around it. They're only 8 or 9 points above Frank Lampard's Everton, so that's nothing to be proud of. And much like Sheffield United, Brentford would be one of the favourites to get relegated next year, I would expect.
Yeah, that's true. Last one. Can you really believe that anybody would boo the song Abide With Me? A song that I'd never heard of until I saw people complaining about Liverpool supporters booing it before the FA Cup final. A song that I didn't know was tradition for the FA Cup final. For whatever reason. And for whatever reason, people are really upset that Liverpool fans booed it. They also booed the national anthem and they booed Prince William. Like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, that's a good question. But, you know, maybe some people don't think that God, the Crown, or the government have served them particularly well. And the weird thing is, that's the interesting part, not the booing. Investigate that bit. Why do people think that? That's where the story is. Imagine if we were to talk about the goals today and only said the ball crossed the line. What happened before it? How did the ball fucking end up there? You're a fucking journalist. That's the bit you should be interested in. But of course, complaining that someone is complaining would be standard fare for someone who doesn't want anyone to question what might be the root cause. Let's just tell them they're wrong to be annoyed. But why the fuck is Abide With Me being sung? Who died? Like, maybe they were just booing the DJ. Maybe they were booing Prince William because he's a Villa fan. Because they were annoyed about the rough treatment we were dishing out last week. Maybe they were booing the national anthem because they think Gareth Southgate is a twat. I don't know, Colin. But somebody should be investigating this. They shouldn't be just saying they're booing. They're wankers.
Yeah, all the biggest story here is people caring about it. Like, it's so strange. Like, it's so, yeah, like, you often, yeah, and I don't get why people would boo. People have different reasons for all sorts of things. But remember, like, during, there was international tournaments. We'll get it now in the World Cup again. Can't believe England fans are booing this national anthem. Or can't believe whoever fans are booing that national anthem. And the first question should always be, who cares? Like, why does this matter? And then when it comes down to Abide With Me, never mind the national anthem, it's a weird, I wouldn't say it's even a hill you're dying on, but a hill to be bored to death on.
But like, it's essentially a really peaceful form of protest. Let's find out what they're protesting against and then figure out, but we know what they're protesting against. But yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, why would anybody be annoyed at that? Like, you know, it's like, oh my God, the disrespect to who? To God? What are you talking about? To some shit hymn writer from 200 years ago? He's dead. Doesn't matter.
Oh, anyway, that was enjoyable. Thanks for that. We're back on Thursday night, Burnley, and then Sunday, the big one against Man City. Jeez, it would be really cool, wouldn't it, to end the season. Really cool to end the season with a couple of results, but really have such a... It is nice going into a game with something to play for, as long as Liverpool balls it up on Tuesday night, actually.
At least we'll know by then.
So... Yeah, we'll chat to you on Thursday, I suppose. Thanks a million again for listening. And please share the podcast on and get in touch if you want. All the best. See you later. That wind is calling my name, and I won't wait, or I'll never get on.